Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5 year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 6 of week number 20, studying Matthew chapter 20. As we get started, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. You will find 2 new books available at that page, Receiving the Gift of Salvation and Surrendering to His Lordship. Download these 2 books for free, read them, and be blessed by both. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. Text IGHFREE to 55222. To study the Bible online, go to IGH.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call toll-free 1-855-IGH-6988 for a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at International Gospel Hour to request that series. Let's return to our study of Matthew chapter 20. In Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 through 19, Jesus, as he prepared to go to Jerusalem, spoke to the disciples about his coming trials and crucifixion. These 3 verses represent the 3rd of 4 times that Jesus alluded to his betrayal, to his trials, and to his death. In Matthew 16, verse 21 through 28, the first instance, after Peter declared that Jesus was the Son of the living God, the text tells us that, from that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the 3rd day. It was here that Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you." Jesus not only corrected Peter, affirming that what he, Jesus, said about his impending suffering would really happen, he also told the disciples that they too would suffer as he was about to. In the second prediction of his trials and eventual death, the transfiguration scene of Matthew 17, verses 1 through 22, Jesus taught pretty much the same thing. Now, while they were staying in Galilee, Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And the 3rd day he will be raised up." And they were exceedingly sorrowful. Matthew 17, verses 22 and 23. This passage, Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 through 10, as we noted above, was the 3rd reference to Jesus' coming trials and death. The 4th and the final predictive text appear in the opening verses of Matthew chapter 26. There, just as Jesus concluded his 5th major discourse in Matthew, we read this: "Now it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, that he said to his disciples, 'You know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified.'" Matthew 26, verses 1 and 2. Later in Matthew 26, as he was observing the Passover meal and instituting what we later know to be the memorial communion, Jesus referred to his impending death again, but with more restrained, figurative language than these 4 instances that we just cited. Jesus' message was not just that he prepared to go to Jerusalem, but that the apostles should be prepared for it as well. The text tells us that Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem," verses 17 and the first part of verse 18 in Matthew chapter 20. Jesus was at that moment actively going to Jerusalem. But Jesus turned his singular by himself trip into a we plural trip with these words, "We are going up to Jerusalem." To be sure, the singular purpose to be fulfilled in Jerusalem in the coming days was a very Jesus-centric thing. No one else, not even the apostles, could do what Jesus was about to do. But in that Jesus' purpose and goal would necessarily involve the future of the apostles' mission, it became a we event. Jesus, of course, did not come into this world just so that he could go to the city of Jerusalem. Jesus went there to finally and to fully accomplish why he came to this world. What Jesus would finish at the cross would, of course, involve the future work of the apostles. That's why it's interesting to note that Jesus said, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem." The rest of the passage says that the Son of Man will be betrayed, emphasizing that the primary focus will be on what happens to Jesus. But the word "we" in the phrase, "we are going up," a single word in the original, appears as a first-person plural verb. It was definitely still a "we" thing as well as a Jesus thing. The apostles were going with Jesus. They would not be betrayed. They would not be tried. They would not be crucified. But they would witness what happened as Jesus fulfilled his mission. Note the response of the disciples in each of the four predictive settings. In Matthew chapter 16, Peter rebuked Jesus. He boldly declared that what Jesus foretold about his trials and his death would never happen. In Matthew chapter 17, the apostles were exceedingly sorrowful to hear what would happen in Jerusalem. Chapter 17, verse 23. In this context, there was no direct apostolic response to Jesus' predictions. And in the final reference in Matthew 26, though there was no apostolic response, the frenzy of the priests, scribes, and elders as they plotted to have Jesus put to death was in full swing in that setting. Matthew 26, verses 3 through 5. Consider some of the specifics about Jesus' statements concerning his trials and death in these four passages. Matthew 16, in this text, Jesus stated that he would go to Jerusalem, that he would suffer at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and scribes, that he would be killed, and that he would be raised the third day. Verse 21 of Matthew 16. In Matthew 17, consistent with the prior account in Matthew 16, Jesus foretold his betrayal into the hands of men, without telling who those men were, that he would be killed and then raised the third day. Verses 22 and 23 of Matthew 17. The differences between this and the prior statement in Matthew 16, Jesus spoke about his betrayal here, but not in Matthew 16. In 16:21, Jesus specifically identified the elders, priests, and scribes, but here only the hands of men. There's no mention of his preceding suffering in this text, nor was there any reference to Jerusalem. Both accounts remark about Jesus' death and Jesus' resurrection. In Matthew 20, Jesus would go to Jerusalem. He would be betrayed to the chief priests and the scribes. They will condemn him to the Gentiles to be mocked, scourged, and crucified. Jesus would rise on the third day, Matthew 20, verses 18 and 19. There's a bit more detail in this text, specifically about the involvement of the Gentiles as they mocked, scourged, and eventually crucified Jesus. All three records to this point mention Jesus' resurrection. And then Matthew 26. This fourth allusion to Jesus' death was the briefest of all. Within 2 days, Jesus would be delivered up to be crucified. There's no reference to Jerusalem at this point because Jesus was already there. The betrayal, though not mentioned in this specific reference, the first verses of Matthew 26, will take place in this continuing context, within just a few verses, in fact. See, for example, chapter 26, verse 14 and following. And in this setting, there was no reference to Jesus' resurrection. Whatever else the apostles thought about the coming trials and crucifixion of Jesus, some of them were still more focused on themselves than on the Lord. In Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 28, we will read about the request made by the mother of James and John. Jesus' question in reply, their response, Jesus' explanation, the response of the 10 apostles, and then finally, Jesus' teaching about the principles of authority and service. We start with the request made by the mother of James and John. The question came in a very unassuming way at first. The mother of Zebedee's sons, meaning, of course, Zebedee's wife, came to Jesus. In other contexts, we learn that she was a disciple of the Lord, and what appears to be her name. That she was a follower can be seen in this crucifixion passage that references the women who were at the cross. And many women who followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, were there looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. That's Matthew 27, 55 and 56. In this account, there were three women identified: Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the third, the mother of Zebedee's sons. That, no doubt, was the same woman mentioned here in Matthew 20, verses 20 and following. Mark's parallel account also mentioned three women. The first two are the same: Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James the Less and Joseph. The third, however, was named Salome. If there were only three women present at the time, then Salome would appear to be the mother of Zebedee's sons. It's possible, though, that the three women in Matthew's account were not the same as the three women in Mark's account. How could that be the case? It could be the case because there were more than three women present, but that the names of only these three were mentioned. Why note that possibility? Because both Matthew and Mark, in their respective contexts, say, "And many women who followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, were there looking on from afar, among whom," Matthew 27, 55. And then Mark 15, 40, "There were also women looking on from afar, among whom." Matthew and Mark both indicate that the three mentioned either by name or by name and some other designation, for example, the mother of, both Matthew and Mark tell us that they were not the only three present. One interesting thought here before we continue. Even though it's frequently referred to in the works of many commentators, there's nothing in the biblical text that indicates that the woman identified here as the mother of the sons of Zebedee was the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. It makes for great speculation that it was Jesus' aunt who petitioned him to allow her two sons to sit on either side of the Lord when he came into his kingdom. If that speculation were true, Jesus' aunt made a request for her sons, James and John, Jesus' cousins, to co-reign with him. Again, an interesting speculation, but one without any biblical support. We will take up at this point in our next broadcast. This reminder as we close: to start our completely free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.